This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
It's time for our Journos program. And joining us now on the line is The Guardian's Jonathan Howcroft. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Good to speak to you both again.
Great to talk to you too. And Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you both.
Jonathan, you were reporting on the Socceroos opener against Jordan and you were doing the live feed on The Guardian. Just your thoughts on their 1-0 loss and where this team is realistically at heading into the second group game.
I guess I'd split it in two directions. The first way that I would look at it would be, to my perspective, the result was all about Jordan. It was a Jordan victory. It wasn't an Australian defeat, if that logic makes sense. I know clearly we're in Australia, there's an Australian show, and we're focused on Australia. But to me, looking at it objectively, that was a victory for Jordan, the way they applied their tactics, the way they measured the threat that Australia would present for them and how to counteract that. Moreover, their ability to look dangerous on the counter-attack as well. I thought they just got everything spot on. And sometimes you have to hold your hands up and say the other team were just better on the day and deserved to win and not necessarily dig too deeply into the losing team's performance, more amplify what the winning team did well. That all said, we are in Australia. We are going to have to talk about Australia and the things that they got wrong. And they got a lot wrong. The selection was questionable. I think Robbie Cruz has had a few too many poor games in a row to be an automatic first choice. I've got concerns about Trent Sainsbury. His form in recent friendlies and again the other night. The midfield balance didn't feel good with Mark Milligan and Mas Luongo alongside each other. And I thought the Jordanian coach was superb in his post-match comments about how he targeted Milligan and Luongo as the focal point of the Jordanian press. You could definitely see that in the game and to hear him come out and explain afterwards that was where they were targeting the opportunity for turnovers, I thought was really illuminating. The qualities that we saw in Australia in those pre-tournament friendlies, which I think quite rightly gave a lot of cause for optimism, was that fluid three, I don't know whether you call them three nines or three nine, ten, elevens, however you describe it, front line. And the inclusion, the lack of Andrew Naboot, who unfortunately went down through injury, threw a spanner in the works because Jamie McLaren doesn't play that role. He isn't one of those three. He is an out-and-out number nine. And as we've seen in previous appearances for the Socceroos, he needs the team to play a certain way. And that's not how they've been drilled to play in recent months. So I thought that selection, as well as a couple of other poorer performances, really unpicked a lot of what Graham Arnold would have been working towards. And I think there's now a lot to do ahead of the Palestine game and even more importantly, the Syria game that follows that. As we saw against Jordan, if you sit deep and clog up the centre of the park and force Australia to go wide, they're bereft of ideas, really, unless Tom Rogic pulls something out of the bag. A lot of that is unfortunate. Daniel Azani should be there. Martin Boyle should be there. Matt Leckie would have started if he was fit. So there are a lot of things going against Graham Arnold at the moment and an awful lot to work on for the remainder of the tournament.
Jonathan, Snick here, and you spoke a bit about some of the personnel that didn't perform, the likes of Sainsbury, Milligan, Luongo, and even Robbie Cruz. Would you be looking to some changes with the likes of maybe Milligan moving into a centre-back role and even a start for Jackson Irvine or Musti Amini in the starting 11 this week?
Yeah, I'm interested that you mentioned Amini at the end there. I expected him to start the Jordan game. I thought I feel like he's the logical alternative to Aaron Moy. If Moy's Moyes obviously not there. It feels like he's the player that can pick up the ball from the centre halves and set the tempo with his range of passing and ability to link up two and three phases of play. I absolutely can see Milligan dropping back into the back four and replacing Trent Sainsbury. And I think further forward, Chris Economides, I thought, did such a good job off the bench. He's in such good form, and he definitely plays that fluid forward role that I think is what Graham Arnold is looking for. So, I think Amini and Economides would probably force their way into my team. As for Jackson Irvine, I'm not completely sure, and I'll be completely honest with you. I don't really know what his best position is or how best to use him. I'm happy to put my hands up and say that's just my fault for not having a good enough understanding of his game. Yeah. But it feels like he could play a 6, an 8, a 10, and within this system that Graham Arnold's building, I'm not completely sure which of those best suits him. Having him on the bench and the ability to pinch hit in any of those options is obviously a great luxury to have. For me, Amini and Economides are the two that stand out.
Yeah, and you touched on Irvine, in fact, of not knowing that position, which we've seen his best football. But at club level, when he was playing for Burton Albion, he scored balls about 10, 11 goals playing as a second striker. If Rogic isn't fit, he almost is a like-for-like replacement. Do you think that he could play that role, maybe getting forward and offering a bit of support as that second striker if McLaren was to start, or even Janu or Nabu if he's fit?
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely got the quality to do that. My concern would be that the way teams are going to defend against Australia really does require somebody like Rogic, who has the deftness of touch and confidence in tight areas at the top of the box. And I'm not sure that's Jackson Irvine. Although, perhaps there is a course for a plan B after identifying how successfully Jordan dealt with Australia in the opening match. It's clearly set a template for how other teams are going to line up against the Socceroos. And it's not just Jordan in that match. It's been happening for a number of years now. So perhaps a legitimate two-pronged attack. And if it is Apostolos Giannou and Jackson Irvine, actually utilise their ability in the air and their physical threat, rather than trying to pick their way through a well-marshalled defensive line. But after watching the friendlies and seeing what Graham Arnold did with Sydney FC, that would have to be a plan B, I would have thought, rather than a plan A for the long term.
And Jonathan, what do you think we can expect from Palestine?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, as far as rankings go, they're at least the equivalent of Jordan. They put up a good showing against Syria in their opening match. So I think we can expect more of the same, really. I think for anybody who would perceive themselves as underdogs against Australia, the template has now been set, and it's up to Australia to find a way around it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one. And just talking about the Asian Cup in its entirety, what have you enjoyed so far? There's been a lot of goals and a lot of action. Is there anything in particular, other than the Socceroos' performance, that you've taken away from this tournament?
I thought India's performance against Thailand was eye-catching. And some of the old cliches about the populations of China and India and it just being a matter of time before they become international powerhouses in a sport like football. Clearly, it's a long way off. But when you see a performance like that and you think of the potential of a country like that, they've got the Super League up and running, which is, you would imagine, will only improve with time. It's an exciting time to be part of the Asian Football Confederation. And it's performances like that that can trigger an interest in a football population and be a bit of a landmark, you know, the kind of result that we'll look back on in decades to come and say, you know, that was the start of it all potentially. So, yeah, that would be the one for me.
And Jonathan, obviously you've covered these tournaments for a number of years. After match day one in 2019, how far do you think some of these countries have come?
Oh, enormously. I think there's a sharing of ideas now in global football. The access to coaches and coaching methodologies and players playing in different leagues. There's just a greater sophistication now in international football than there ever has been. And I think one of the challenges for the later stages, the early knockout rounds in particular, will be to see how much more some of these teams have got in their attacking capabilities. It's one thing to set up a team as an underdog and drill it to play on the counter attack. It's another to actually set them up to play a more assertive brand of football. And I think that's the next stage that will be interesting to see of the remainder of the tournament, and then in successive tournaments. But absolutely, it's been so far, it's been another step forward in the quality of football that we've seen.
And Jonathan, just looking back to obviously what's going on back here in the A-League, it's been really a festival of football. But one thing in particular we've seen over the past few weeks has been the rise of the Wellington Phoenix. Do you think that they are starting to solidify themselves as a real contender heading into the final series?
Yeah, absolutely they are. And I think the sooner the rest of the competition takes them seriously, the better. Matt Rudan is doing an absolutely fantastic job. There's a solidity to how they're playing. They've got a quality goalkeeper, a solid spine. And he's, where are we now, 10, 11 weeks in? He's now figuring out what his preferred attacking combination is, and the relationship between Williams, Krishna and Singh is blossoming. So yeah, they are a threat to the rest of the competition and a joy to watch at the moment. There's a real spirit about them that I like, and no shortage of quality as well. So I'm hugely impressed with what they've achieved this season.
And Jonathan, the January transfer window is obviously open. Can you shed any light on the reported marquee swap between Melbourne City and Perth Glory?
I can't shed any more than has already been reported by Dave Davidovich, who is, as you well know, impeccable at this kind of thing. I thought it was interesting to see Tony Popovich asked about it and actually pushed about it, which I liked in his press conference earlier this week. Clearly, there's no smoke without fire, and something is happening. Whether that actually becomes the swap that Dave has suggested remains to be seen. It would seem like a huge win for Melbourne City if that was the case. I know Bruno Fornaroli is an outstanding footballer, but he's not played for a long time. And before that, he was out with a long injury. A move to a new club is never a guaranteed success. And in Andy Keogh, they don't just have a goal scorer. They've got a leader who's been there for a number of years. He's hard-nosed. He's a winner. He's absolutely not somebody that I would be wanting to leave my club at this stage of the season with the position that they are. I can see how they might want to add Bruno Fornaroli to that mix, but not at the expense of Andy Keogh.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because obviously Fornaroli hasn't played for a while, but if he can get to his best, it'd obviously be a big plus for Perth if it was to go through. But the manner of this proposed transfer is really interesting, because it's almost like a trade, and that's very much unheard of, almost in the footballing landscape. I think the only one that really comes to mind is almost what happened with Manchester United with Sanchez and Mkhitaryan. Do you think we could see more of that maybe in Australia, considering there isn't much of an internal transfer window down here?
I think the latter part of what you just explained will happen. We're months away from having an internal transfer system. We're waiting on the new league's working group from reporting back to the FFA board in March. And I find it inconceivable that an independent A-League wouldn't have some kind of internal transfer market, which would render these kind of conversations like we're seeing between Perth and Melbourne City redundant, because if Melbourne City wanted Andy Keogh, Perth would just name their price and City would either pay it or look elsewhere. And I think the kind of negotiation that they're having to go through is a reflection of a system that isn't optimally designed. As much as in an open market you can still have trades like you suggested with Sanchez and Mkhitaryan, that's because of an equivalent market value. That's not because there's no alternative to arranging either of the deals, which is the case here. So I think we'll just look back at it as a bit of an anomaly, as a consequence of not having a proper transfer system at this point in the competition's history.
Yeah, and exactly right. Hopefully we can get that internal transfer window sorted sooner rather than later. But tonight, the original rivalry, there's a big, big change in the Melbourne Victory squad. Elvis Campsober will be starting his first game for the Melbourne Victory, coming in for Josh Hope. What can you tell us about the Victory in Adelaide heading into this one? A very interesting change, considering that it looks like Campsober may be playing as a 10.
Yeah, it's hugely exciting for him and the MPL development pathway, which Victory have taken advantage of in recently with a few players. But it's a huge task for them at the moment. They don't have Keisuke Honda for 4 weeks. George Niedermeyer is struggling with injury, so they really just have to scrap it out and try and pick up as many points as they can over the coming weeks. Adelaide feel to me very much like all the working parts are there. They just don't have a goal scorer. And I think that it's been a conversation about them for a couple of seasons. And I can see us having this conversation monthly between now and the end of the season. If they don't bring anybody else in the transfer window, they just need a number nine who can put the ball in the back of the net. And if they had that, then they would have be a lot higher up the table, because they certainly create enough chances. They look very good all the way up to the penalty area. It's just sticking it in the back of the net, unfortunately.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR, and we look forward to chatting to you next week.
Yeah, pleasure. Hopefully in the aftermath of a better Socceroos performance.